So it's with great pleasure that I introduce Rosemary Stanton. And many of you, of course, will know of Rosemary's work. And Dr. Rosemary Stanton is Australia's best-known nutritionist with a background in biochemistry, nutrition, dietetics and public health. She was awarded an Order of Australia Medal for her services to community health through education in malnutrition, in nutrition and dietetics. Her major aim is to change Australians' poor eating habits so that people have healthier diets and eat more enjoyable foods which create minimal environmental damage. Thanks, Rosemary.
Thank you, Stuart, and thank you for inviting me to come and talk tonight on this topic. It's a topic that's been quite dear to my heart for the last couple of years. In fact, it's occupied most of my thinking in nutrition for the last couple of years. So it's very hard sometimes to convince people that it's actually important, but I believe it is, and so we need to start looking at it. For many years, I've been putting up the Stanton triangle, pyramid, whatever you like to call it. I call it a triangle. I've always been talking about the need to look at nutrition and health. I've also been pretty strong, I suppose, on talking about what I call food literacy, knowing where our food comes from, knowing what happens to it, all of these sort of aspects of food, how to cook it, how to prepare it. And for about the last 15 to 20 years, I've been sort of throwing in environmental sustainability. But it's only in the last 2 years that I've actually ever been talking about the green bit. So I've spent all the time talking about the other two. And in fact, when you start looking at the environmental sustainability of what we eat, you find that nutrition and health actually falls into a very nice place, because many of the foods that we currently eat, which are fairly unsustainable if we're going to have a sustainable future, are also not particularly desirable for health. And you would need to have some food literacy to know how to cook foods and prepare foods. So I think all aspects of these things are coming together, and I'll probably spend the next 30 years, if I get to be 95, talking about these sorts of things. The issues that we need to address are firstly the fact that we consume so much and we buy so much, and this contributes both to wastage with two types of spilling. So we waste an enormous amount of food. I think that there's probably nobody in the room who couldn't go home and find something in their fridge that should have been thrown out last week and will eventually be thrown out. We tend to buy far more than we actually need, and then when it goes bad, we chuck it. And of course, we have the problem that we're getting bigger and bigger around the waist, which Stuart already alluded to, with the problem, a huge problem of obesity. So our overconsumption is a big problem, and of course, we're using up resources at an enormous rate. And I think we need to consider very carefully the ethics of using so many of the world's energy resources to produce a great amount of animal food, to produce a lot of foods which are modified in a way that uses a lot of energy resources, and to sort of see, as some people do, that the future of saving our diet and nutrition is to develop what are called functional foods. These are foods that have something from one food put into another food. And there may be some examples where that's going to be sustainable, it's going to be good. But there are also some where you're using enormous energy resources to provide an extra food for somebody who's already got more than enough to eat, and at the same time you're depriving someone somewhere else in the world of the opportunity to have enough to eat. So these are some of the aspects that I think we need to look at. When we start looking at the environmental issues that are associated with our food system, and I'm talking here about the production and transport and distribution and storage and disposal of waste within the system, then we've got greenhouse gases, obviously, to consider. We've got the water issues, including irrigation, and it may well be that we'd be much better off importing some products from other countries where they have adequate water than ruining some of our land with excessive irrigation. The soil fertility is something that I usually talk about, and I'm going to leave to Dana to talk about, because she is much better able to talk about that and is going to give us some details. The reduced biodiversity as we go for particular strains of things. So whereas we used to have lots and lots of varieties of apples, for example, or lots of different varieties of pigs, we are now constrained, and these things are coming down to very few examples. I've mentioned the high production of animal foods that's going to come up over and over, and also the aspects of processing and packaging and storage and transport. And finally, something that I'm also not going to have time to talk about but just want to flag, is the production of using food sources for ethanol. so that our cars will start competing with humans for energy resources. And this is already happening in some parts of the world. If we look at the greenhouse gas issue, agriculture produces about 16%, about a sixth of our greenhouse gases, so it's certainly significant. And 70% of those gases come from our production of livestock. So when we start looking at how do we cut down on some of these things, cutting down on livestock is certainly one way to go. Methane is a particularly problematic gas. It's actually an odourless gas. I think if I'd like a dollar for every time I hear somebody cracking some joke about odoriferous gases and methane all in the same sentence. Methane doesn't have any odour at all. It is produced by sheep and cattle in large quantities. It's also produced by about 50% of humans, and we're not quite sure why some people are methane producers and others aren't. Schoolboys like to light it and things like that as it's coming out. But in fact, it is a particularly problematic gas because it has such an intense effect as it's being excreted. And of course, it comes out in burps from cattle and sheep, so we tend to joke about the other end. If you improve the feed that cattle have, and in fact, even if you feed them grain, which as I'm going to talk about later is not a good idea, it actually gives you less methane produced per cow. But it's fairly a slight decrease. CSIRO are working on that and trying to reduce the amount of methane that comes out of our beef cattle. And they are producing, having some success, but it's pretty minor. So what can we do? I want to have a look in this talk. I want to just try and be practical because I haven't got enough time to go into all the theory. So what can we do? Well, firstly, try and avoid waste. Don't buy lots of stuff just in case. Now, that applies to all stuff, but including food stuff. Favour plant foods. Every time I come up with an action statement, it's going to be there, I'm afraid. Fewer animal foods and probably avoid lot-fed beef. 40 to 80% of our beef comes from lot-fed animals. About 80% of supermarket beef and a lower proportion of beef from independent butchers. We need to choose minimally processed foods and foods with minimal packaging. And certainly Australia needs to look very carefully at whether we should be exporting beef and lamb and dairy products. Is this something that is sustainable for Australia? And I think the answer is very definitely no. Once you start cutting those exports, the farmers will complain, and I live surrounded by farmers. They'll start telling me that they can't make a living. So it may be that animal products have to become much more expensive. Water is another thing that we need to consider. It is probably one of the most vital issues for Australia. And it's worth noting that the production of animal foods uses much more water than is required for most plant foods. What do we do about water issues? Again, favour plant foods. This is going to sound like a bit of a broken record. Fewer animal foods. And probably sort of change where we produce animal foods so that we produce them in areas where there's enough natural rainfall, where there's much less chance of erosion, and where there's appropriate native grasses or pasture. And that may mean changing the type of animals that we're prepared to eat as well. Our soils, Australian soils are very low in phosphorus. You're going to hear more about that. We also have a great reliance on chemical fertilisers. This has always been seen as the answer. You just add a bit more fertiliser if the soil is poor. And of course, in places like Sydney, we've pushed, which I guess developed because there was good rainfall here, there's fairly reasonable soil and we could produce food for people. When I was a child, I lived in West Pennant Hills, surrounded by farms which produced Sydney's vegetables. Everywhere, all those areas now are houses. And of course, we're now trying to grow vegetables in areas where there isn't enough rainfall, where the soil is poor. We should have put all the people in Goulburn and grown the vegetables in Sydney. We really have a very strange idea, but town planning is actually extremely important. We've had very little research in Australia on organic production, and if you look at the research funds that go into that, they're minuscule. And there's a general feeling among many agricultural scientists that this is not an area that's worthy of study. And I think that's really quite wrong, and it's an area that ought to be studied a lot more. What sort of action can we do with soils? Well, we certainly need to increase our recovery as phosphorus. Once again, change the diet to one with more plant foods. And probably favouring smaller animals is important. So chickens are probably better than beef cattle, and also favour locally grown organic produce. Modern food production emphasises animal foods and processed foods and packaged foods and foods for export and imports. If you have a look in your supermarket at the moment, you'll see that there are navel oranges being imported into Australia from California. They are much more expensive than the Valencias, but they sell much better. And this is because they don't have any pips. So we've become such a precious society, we'd rather import oranges from California in our summer instead of waiting for our navel oranges to be ripe in the winter, when we've got perfectly good Valencias, which on a taste testing, if you take the pips out, people actually prefer. But we're prepared to pay for them. So we have some crazy ideas. And I just want to talk, first of all, about animal foods. Stuart already mentioned this, but throughout the world, 40% of all grain grown in the world is fed to animals. And you need enormous amounts of feed to produce a kilogram of protein from meat. And it's not the meat there, which you mentioned a different figure, Stuart. That's to produce a kilogram of protein from meat. And the issues that are involved are the fact that we clear the land, we have farm inputs, and enormous amounts of waste. Now, a 450-kilogram steer, which is about the size of the things I walk past on my evening walks in Kangaroo Valley, produce 29 kilograms of wet waste every day. And if any of you have ever been near a feedlot, you will be able to smell it from about 5 to 10 kilometres away, depending on the wind. But even if the wind isn't there, you can smell it from 5 kilometres away. All that stuff has to be got rid of. It's a huge loss of nutrients. For animal production, we probably need some government action. We probably need to reduce animal numbers and lot feeding and reduce exports and reclaim the phosphorus. And these are not things that individuals probably can do. But for our personal action, we can reduce our consumption of meat. I'm not convinced we should have no meat. I think reduced consumption would be a really good way to go. Once you go down to no meat, you've got a few other... You can certainly design a nutritious diet without meat. That's not difficult at all. But I'm not sure we're going to win the hearts and minds of Australians if we say no meat. So at the moment, I'm happy to go for reduced consumption of meat, but if you personally prefer to have none, that's not a problem as far as I'm concerned. We probably need to favour certain animals over others, and if it's appropriate for you to have chooks at home, they're not a bad idea because they eat the scraps, they produce eggs, and when they get old, you can eat them if you're able to kill them, which I'm not. Processed foods are really an important part of our diet, and what we need to consider here are the energy inputs in producing the foods, in processing the foods, in packaging them and disposing of the waste packaging. The kilojoules to process 1 kilogram of food, and again, I just think it's interesting to look at this, enormous amounts of kilojoules. I think the low kilojoule soft drink is really interesting. Here we use up enormous amounts of energy to produce a food with no energy so that people who have adequate amounts of water to drink and are overfed anyway can consume these products. Now, this is the ultimate obscenity in my book, and many of the low kilojoule foods take enormous amounts of energy to produce when really we could just eat a little less. Sorry about the chocolate. What can we do about processed food? Well, the first thing to do is please drink water out of the tap, refill your bottle. There are 400 billion plastic bottles disposed of throughout the world every year, and these are going into landfill and they're causing enormous problems. So getting rid of bottled water would be step one. Have a bottle that you can refill. We could use fewer processed products, which means you have to sort of do a bit of cooking. We could select products that are less processed, so you can actually cook rolled oats. I had a Scottish grandmother who taught me how to cook rolled oats and put in the soak the night before. It takes 2 seconds. They then cook the next morning in about 2 minutes. We could cook real foods from scratch. We could cook at home. School kitchen gardens are another area that I've become very involved with through the Stephanie Alexander Kitchen Garden Program. And this is one of the most exciting programs that we can see happening in Australia. And, of course, you can grow your own if you possibly have access to a backyard, some pots or a community plot or even a front verge. The packaged foods all come into this as well, and you can choose foods with less or no packaging. You can recycle your packaging at home. And we need to do a bit of lobbying. You have to all become activists, and you need to lobby all levels of government, the local government on recycling bins, which are very often not available, state government to set mandatory rules for deposits on containers, which brings them all back in, and the federal government for mandatory recycling costs to be included in the product price. And the foods for export, we export an enormous amount of food, which is probably quite unsustainable for Australia in the future. So I think we're going to have to reassign the way we price foods so that the people who grow foods get a decent living from growing the foods and they don't have to rely on over sort of working the land or the sea or whatever in order to export foods and make some money. If we look at the foods that have increased over for export over the last couple of years, they've almost all been highly processed products, things like ice cream mixes and canned products and things that really, most of them junk food actually. Some of the other food factors that I don't have time to go into, I mentioned the overconsumption. The idea of choice. Do you need 27 different varieties of milk in the supermarket? I mean, if your choice has gone absolutely crazy, the average supermarket now stocks 1,800 different snack foods. This is a total absurdity, and somebody's got to say, stop. So I'm saying it. We've got to stop having foods out of season. We need to consider food miles, although it's a difficult concept. It's not a simple concept, and we need to look at trade issues as well, and whether it's appropriate to grow some foods in some settings and not in others. And the questions we need to ask, should we go down the food chain? I think the answer is yes. Should we go organic and should we favour a vegetarian diet? Going down the food chain, I think, is actually quite important. We're seeing an enormous experiment happening throughout Asia at the moment, that as people become more affluent throughout Asia, they're eating more animal foods and more processed foods, they're cutting down on the plant foods they consume, and then they become obese. They get diabetes, cardiovascular disease, and a number of very common and very nasty cancers. This is a living experiment we're seeing happening in our backyard, and we're contributing to some of it by exporting our diet to other countries around us. Should we go organic? Well, there is the benefit that it does raise environmental consciousness. People start thinking about what they're eating, decreases the use of pesticides and artificial fertilisers, and certainly lower greenhouse gas is involved with many organic products, though not, I'm afraid, if they're actually imported from California. And there are some possible nutritional advantages, not in vitamins, but certainly in some of the other factors which are currently being researched. Should we go vegetarian? Well, certainly a plant-based diet ticks a lot of boxes: less energy use, less greenhouse gas production, better use of land, better water use, and is therefore more sustainable. So that's something that I think people actually need to consider. Maybe not every day, but at least some days is a good way to start. And just finally, the ethanol-based fuel. If we look at the competition between people and cars, then the amount of land that produces ethanol for one car for 1 year would feed seven people. So one car or seven people. It's the choice we have to make. And some of the data on the ethanol-based fuels, it's fine if you're using waste materials and perhaps using algae, and there's a lot of research going on as to making ethanol-based fuels sustainable. But currently, the ones we're looking at simply are not sustainable. So the thing to always remember, I think, is what we eat is very much related to our health. It's strongly related to the protection of our land and water. And let's not forget the social equity. The world can only produce so much, and it needs to be distributed more evenly than has happened in the past. So thank you.